my name is Sydney Brenner, and I'm here with Corey Murphy, and we are at Mill Mountain in downtown Roanoke. The date is February 28th, and it is 2:18 p.m. So, can you tell us, what is your name?
My name is Ronald Davidson.
And where were you born, and what is your date of birth?
November 21st, 1948, and I was born in Roanoke.
So, where was your family originally from?
Both of my grandparents were pretty much from this area.
Okay.
Franklin County down to Fincastle, which are outlying counties.
So did you have any siblings growing up? Can you tell me about your home life?
I had one brother. He and I, we weren't really close growing up. There was never any problems about me being gay. I mean, that wasn't the reason. He just went one way and I went another way.
Right. So you say that you and your brother weren't that close, but he didn't really have a problem. So when did you find out or realize your sexual preference?
Probably when I was in the military, which was in the 70s.
So what was that experience like? Were you outcasted at all for being gay?
Well, most of the time we would go out and get drunk, it'd be a bunch of us, and we'd end up going back and taking a shower all together, and then, you know, one thing led to another, but then the next day, you know, we would see each other and look at each other like nothing ever happened.
Right, and so before that, did you attend high school?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and so then you weren't sure that you were gay, or?
In high school, I dated women, I played football, I wrestled, you know, the whole nine yards.
And so, did you ever marry or have children?
No.
Okay. Are you in a relationship now?
Yes. I've been in a relationship for 35 years.
Congratulations.
And we have been married for two. When it was legal in Virginia to get married, I told him that we would get married, and we did.
And so, do you live together?
Oh, yes.
What do you guys like to do on your spare time?
I retired, and my husband said that I couldn't retire unless he did. And so I said, well, okay, we had got to the point that everything was paid for. We had some substantial good income, and so we both retired. I sold one house. We moved into a smaller home that was paid for, and we traveled. I'm part owner in an antique mall, and I travel around, you know, just buying and selling antiques and stuff on the side. It's kind of a hobby.
So you do that in the Roanoke area?
Yeah, well, I mean, I travel as far as Atlanta doing that, going to shows and going to big auctions and that kind of thing.
Okay. So you never really left this area because you said you grew up here.
Yeah, pretty much I've stayed here.
Okay. So when you got out of the military, what was your occupation?
I worked for Ingersoll Rand. That was a big industrial manufacturing place. And then I left there. And I went to work for McAdoo's. And I've worked there. I've kind of worked my way up to where I was kind of my own boss. I was kind of carte blanche with the owner. I traveled anywhere from New York to Atlanta, Miami, just buying stuff for his chain of restaurants.
And have you ever experienced any discrimination at McAdoo's at all?
No, none. Actually, my partner and I, when he would have a big Christmas party, and I mean, he owns 20 stores, and so it was a large Christmas party, my partner and I would be usually the first people on the dance floor.
It sounds like you had a pretty extensive social life then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I've always been into the arts. I have a degree in interior design from the University of North Carolina. It started out, I guess, when I came back from the military, there really wasn't a big good place for gays to gather. And so we would have like dinner parties, and we would go from like one couple's house to another couple's house, and there would be anywhere from 5 to 15 couples, you know, and that kind of thing. For a while, I did some ballroom dancing that involved females, especially at Hotel Roanoke. Let me see, as far as social. I've always been pretty much been in the artist type scene here in town. I've won the Hieronymus Sidewalk Show. I'm a lifetime member of the Fine Arts Council.
So, did you meet any interesting people along the way in your social excursions?
You mean like
new friends?
Celebrities or...
Celebrities, anyone. Anyone that really kind of took you back and was like, wow. Anyone influential?
Nobody that really impressed me. I'm not really impressed with people. I'm kind of impressed with what they do, not who they are.
Right. So are you active in the Roanoke community?
Not as much as I did. At first when they had Pride in the Park, when they first started that, actually it was in a park right across the street from my house. And I did a good bit of fundraising for they have silent auctions and that type of thing. And I knew a lot of business owners in the Roanoke area that would donate stuff, and you know, they would donate it because they were, I won't say sympathetic, but they were for the cause.
Right, yeah. So we were informed that you actually started a motorcycle club.
Well, I didn't start it, but I was a little instrumental in getting it going. It wasn't really a motorcycle club. It was a Levi Leather type thing. There was only a few members that had motorcycles, but our biggest thing is we raised money for the community, and we would go, there were other clubs around, we would go to D.C. or to Norfolk, and they had chapters of the same type of club there, and we would host runs where we'd, you know, go bar hopping and that kind of thing, but most of the time it was to raise awareness and money for different charities.
You said before how there wasn't really a lot of places for all of you guys to go out, so you would go to different couples' houses.
Yeah.
Would you say that that has changed now? Is there more environment for you guys?
Oh, yes. I feel like that we have really, you know, paved the way for the newer generations, like the, you know, the gay and lesbian clubs in high school now. You know, that was unheard of, you know, when I was growing up. Unheard of, and now they can be, you know, openly going to proms together. You know, that was all unheard of. So I think we kind of paved the way for all that. And now it used to be there were certain restaurants and stuff that were that would tolerate this, but now I think they all have to because they're all in competition to get patrons. Mm-hmm. And I will say probably the gay community spends a lot more money than people realize.
So now, what are some types of places that you go to?
Now I go to McAdoo's, and one reason is because I know everybody there. And it has become kind of a central hangout for the gays. The park, I haven't been in several years, and I don't like the new music. Most everybody there, I could be their grandfather. You know, I just don't feel really comfortable.
Right.
And in the younger days, we used to go to a place called the Garden Lounge in North Carolina, and we would get a couple of loads of people and drive down there just for the night, you know, because there was really nothing here. There was the trade winds. I'm sure you've heard about that extensively. Which I bartended at for a while, and and then I hit all the regulars, you know, O'Charlie's, you know, all all of the rest of the restaurants that anybody else would go to, I go to.
So what do you feel are some of the more important changes in the area since you grew up and realized I am gay? What do you know, have you noticed any important changes in the area and stuff that you've been a part of that you feel has changed the stigma?
Well, like I was saying, I think that the older crowd really paved the way for the younger people now. That like I say, you could probably go anywhere in town here now holding hands, the same sex couple, and you know, it'd be very, very little said. And, you know, when I was growing up here, you couldn't do that. You know, you'd be called names or shunned upon or something thrown at you.
So growing up, did you ever experience discrimination?
My size, and I've always been very outgoing, and I've always been able to fend for myself, and I have never had problems with it at all. I mean, as far as people calling me names, because if they did, I'd probably kick the shit out of them.
Touché. So did you really face any struggles or hardships growing up?
No, not really. I grew up, my mom was a CPA, my dad was a business owner. He always had anxieties for me to take over the business, but I did not feel like being a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And so my brother kind of stepped in, and then my brother was an alcoholic, and he ended up, he didn't take over, and my parents just end up retiring and closing the business down.
So, in the military, let's go backtrack to that.
Okay.
You said that you guys would go out and whatnot and then shower together, and then the next day it would be totally normal, like nothing happened.
Right.
Was that like a everyday kind of type? Not everyday.
Mostly
weekend. Weekend, okay.
Yeah.
And so...
And actually, I did have... One of the weirdest experiences was there was a bar in Norfolk, and I was stationed at the base there, and one of my friends that I had got to know, he said, "What? Well, I want to make some extra money." And he said, "Well, there's a wrinkle room over here." And I thought, "What in the world is a wrinkle room?" And it was older men that would pay younger men for sex.
Interesting.
And I ended up going home with an older Navy, I don't know if he was a captain, but he was an officer. And I don't remember a whole lot about it, but I remember there were right many people there. And I remember he gave me $100 to get a cab home.
So, would you say that... Do you still think that these things, like, still occur in the military?
They probably occur everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, whether it's in the military or not in the military, you know, I just escort services, I guess now they would be called. And it was just a little, it was hush-hush then. That $100 that I got from that guy, I called a buddy of mine on base and told him to come and get me. I never did get a cab, and I kept the $100.
What'd you spend it on?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, but I mean, I just thought that was just the wildest thing in the world.
So, tell us more about your military experience. What were your daily duties, daily
tasks? Well, I went through submarine school. And I spent 6 years in. I was on a nuclear submarine out of Holyluck, Scotland. I was in during Vietnam, but we never saw any action. We were just like on the ready, like on the outside, you know, in case something happened. But I was interior communication. I was in charge of all the communication going on and off the boat. But it was just, it's pretty boring.
So now that you're obviously out of the military and you're living in Roanoke and you're retired, at this point in your life, what is something that is important to you?
My partner is 13 years younger than I am. And when I go, I would like to make sure that he is very well taken care of. As far as I have a nephew that's in prison right now, and he has robbed the family so many times that I have nothing for him at all. And so my partner is the main one. And he has a brother that we really think a lot of that we'll probably leave something to. Other than that, I'm the end of the line.
So in college, you said you went to UNC. Can you tell us some of your social experiences there? What did you like to do on the weekends?
I'd usually come home.
Okay. I feel like that's a far hike.
Huh?
Is that a far drive?
No.
Here to there?
No, it's like 2.5 hours.
Okay. And so you would just go home to your family home?
Yeah.
So.
Or there were a couple of theater groups there that sometimes I would help with, painting sets and, you know, backdrops and, you know, I would help out there, but.
They got poison.
I've only had really like 2 jobs in my life, and I've only had 2 lovers. You know.
So, when you did come home on the weekends during college, what were some of the things that you would do in the area?
We would just get together with friends, and you know, maybe go bar hopping or go to somebody's house, and there was always a lot of dinner parties.
So. What do you think are some challenges facing gay people in Roanoke today?
Wow, that's a tough one. It seems like Roanoke has become the hub of, like, Virginia and North Carolina. It's always been, since the 1940s, you know, it's always been a gay hub. People come from other places to live here because it was a little more tolerable. But I don't know. I mean, I think they're already accepted, and I mean, that could always be a little more of that, but maybe educating some of the people even some of them that are gay, you know, to make good choices, and ones that aren't gay to, you know, realize that we are humans. But as far as making things better, I don't know.
So you say that you wish that there was a little bit more acceptance. There is already, but it's always good to have more. When you first came out, was your family accepting? Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
The first time I came out, that I heard of a bar in Roanoke, I was in the military. I took leave. I had a girlfriend. We went to a bar called the New Wood, which is no longer there. And I told her I was going to go outside and smoke a cigarette. Well, I didn't. I went across the street to the gay bar because I had never been there. So I walked in and I asked the guy. He was a Lebanese guy, the Georges, which I got to know a whole lot better later. I asked him, I said, well, am I in the right place? And he said, well, the bar's downstairs. So I went downstairs, and here was all these people. It was like another little world. There was like a nice restaurant upstairs, but then there was a bar in the basement. And so then I left, and I went back with her. And later we went out again, and I told her I was going to come out to her. And her mother was one of the drama coaches at Holland College. So I'm sure she had been around a lot more gay people than I had, even though she wasn't gay. Well, I took her to this Trade Winds, and as going down the steps, I said, I told her, I said, I don't want to say her name, but anyway, I told her, I said, now we're going to go in. When we go in here, there's something I got to tell you. We opened the door and went in, and she knew everybody there. And this was going to be a, you know, a surprise for me. And she knew everybody there. And, you know, from then on, we were just kind of friends.
So do you think she, like, kind of already knew?
I think she did.
Mm-hmm. So she took it well when you came out and said.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, she, like I say, she knew everybody there.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know anybody. And I was going to come out to her, but I think she knew. As far as my mom and dad, my dad was a drill instructor in the Marines. He was one of the last survivors at Iwo Jima.
Wow.
My mom was fine with it. My dad would never talk about it. He wanted me to be a man. Rather, you know, he didn't realize that if you were gay, you were a man, I guess. But my mom was fine. But mom would cut things out of the paper and put them where he would see them and have to read them. And he would, because he read all the time. But he never would discuss anything with me. Nothing at all.
So was your relationship with your dad kind of distant?
No, it was pretty good, but I think he was a little ashamed. I think he was a little ashamed, him being, you know, a big military man, you know, and that kind of thing, that was just wasn't right.
And so, do you still talk to any of the guys that you hung out with in the military?
Oh, no.
No?
No, I have no idea where they are.
Would you be interested ever trying to, like, reach out to them or finding them?
No. I think that's just a chapter that's behind me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't have any regrets, but I don't see any reason. There's more people in my past that I would like to reach out to than them.
Who are those people that you would like to reach out to?
Oh, some people maybe I was in college with, or even some of the people that I grew up with that moved out of town, or even some cousins, you know, that fourth or fifth cousins, you know, that I've only met maybe once or twice.
So your family now that you have,
I don't.
You don't.
My dad's been deceased for 10 years and my mom, no, for 15 years and my mom for 10 years. And then my brother, he's been deceased for probably 10 years. So that, I have no brothers and sisters or grandparents or mom and dad or, you know, I've got first and second cousins that are 80 years old.
And do you hang out with them at all? Or
I've got some cousins that live in Florida that we'll go down and visit them, or they'll come up and visit us. And they had actually, Eddie, my cousin, remember her name, my cousin that live in Florida, his daughter, she has a black boyfriend. She has two children by marriage, beautiful kids. And then she has a black boyfriend, and then she has a white girlfriend. And her boyfriend is like a babysitter. That's all he does, and she goes out and parties. So we get along real good, and we're on Facebook a lot talking and that kind of thing. But
so they don't have a problem with you being gay at all?
No. Oh, no. No.
We've covered a lot, and it's only been 24 minutes. But so we talked about how you worked at McAdoo's. Can you tell us the experience that you had there and a little bit of what exactly you did? You said you actually decorated the inside of it.
It was a good working experience. The owner and I were good friends. And, of course, him being a multimillionaire, you know, he has a lot of people that want to be his friends. But even, you know, even today, if him and his wife were fighting, he'll get a six-pack and come over to the house and put that on the deck, and, you know, and he'll spill his guts and, you know, and just talk. I mean, we're still just friends. But he and I used to, we would travel to Atlanta, and he would stay there one. We'd go to like a big, huge auction, and he would stay there one day with me. Then he'd go off and play golf at Pinehurst or something, and just leave me. And then I'd buy whatever I wanted to, and then I'd fly back.
So at these auctions, what are some of the things that you do?
Oh, I would buy stuff that was just neat, weird, strange.
For Matthews.
Yeah. Just to decorate. I always liked when he opened a new store to just to be able to go in. We've got a warehouse that's probably half as big as a football field that's packed when I left there 8 years ago. And, you know, we'd like to go in and say, oh, we'll take this and this and this and this. You know, we could just pick through it. A lot of times I bought a pair of boots that are Justin's. They are 10 feet tall. They were advertisement, but they're 10 feet tall. And I bought them. It was two of them. And I bought them out of California and had them shipped here. And when they came in, he says, what in the world are we going to do with those? I said, I don't know. I just thought they were neat. You know, I had a really good job.
Do you miss it at all?
Yeah.
And so what do you like to do during, like, the day if you're retired? What are some of the normal things, daily things that you like to do or that you do that isn't that fun?
I still like to, you know, I'll take off and go hit some antique shops and just look around. And I'm always tinkering with something. I'm good with electronics. But not much of a whole lot. Watch TV. I know that they didn't have it as well as I did growing up. You know, that they would be cough bags and throw stuff at them and their cars vandalized and all that. But I never had any of that. And I always knew that I was fortunate.
So do you have any, like, close friends that, like you said, that people did have a hard time? Do you have any close friends that did experience hard times?
Not close friends, but people I knew. But people that I knew.
Right. And so that must be difficult to hear because you didn't have that rough of a time. Right. I'd assume it's hard to hear.
Yeah.
So.
But a lot of it, I think they brought on themselves, you know, flaunting stuff or saying something to somebody straight that they know they don't want to hear, you know.
For the most part, were you kind of conservative with it and wouldn't really, like, put it out there?
Right. I mean, I tried to live my life just as a normal person. I mean, except I have a different sexual preference. I mean, where we live right now, our neighbors absolutely love us. I mean, we have keys to all their houses. They leave, and they want us to check on their dogs. And there's a woman that lives beside me that's 80 years old, and she'll bake cakes and pies and bring them over to the house. Or, you know, it's a good relationship.
I'm glad to hear that. So, what would you say is the biggest?
I'll tell you, I just thought of something. Yeah, you were saying that one of the biggest problems. I do think that the gay scene has a bigger drug problem. Anybody I've ever known to get any drugs from were gay, or any of them that hurt themselves because of being high were gay. I don't know if because they were, you know, oppressed or what it might have been, but it seems like years ago, I don't know about today because I'm not hip with everything right now, but I know years ago, you know, if you wanted to buy liquor after hours, you need somebody gay that had it at home and they were selling it, or pot, we never were into doing cocaine and heroin, and you know, you might do a little speed or a little weed, and that was about it.
So on nights out, you guys would just, like, you and your partner would just drink and have a good time. Do you have friends that kind of went a little crazy with drugs or anything like that?
Not close friends. I've known some people, but I won't say they're close friends that, you know, have done harder drugs and stuff. I know a lot around the drag queens. They seem like those people were always doing cocaine. I mean, I don't know if they needed to get their nerve up or what it was, but they were always doing cocaine, but they were staying up, you know, all hours of the night. And,
were you ever interested in doing that kind of stuff?
No. I can't say I haven't done it.
Mm-hmm.
But the times I've done it, I would look at it like, now this makes people lose everything they have, their job, and makes them rob from their parents. You know, now how good can this be? You know, I don't think there could be anything that good.
When you told your parents that you were coming out, were you ever worried that you would lose everything?
That I would lose everything. Well, my parents never gave me everything to start with. Yeah, I was always a little resentful of my brother because, you know, he had three or four children, married a couple times. He lived in one of their houses. He worked for my dad. You know, my dad was constantly getting him out of trouble. And I'm the one, I went off to school. I went into the military. I never asked them for anything. So they didn't really have anything they could take away from me.
Were you worried about losing them at all?
Oh, well, yeah, always. Always. They lived to be, you know, in their 80s.
Mm-hmm. But losing them, I guess, if they weren't okay with you being gay, did you ever, like, worry
no,
about
I don't
that
think I ever, no, I don't ever, I don't think I ever thought that. I don't think I ever thought that at all.
Do you have any friends that you lost along the way because you were gay?
No.
So everyone was pretty much accepting?
If they were friends, they wouldn't.
So what would you say was the most influential event growing up that made you who you are today?
I don't know.
Or a couple events, anything.
You mean an event or a person?
Anything influential that really sticks out to you as something that made you who you are.
I couldn't say. I don't know. I've always like kind of liked the finer things, and it seems like if you like the finer things, you're gonna be around gay people. I mean, I don't know why that is, but
good taste.
I guess good taste. I have a fight with my husband all the time about. I collect a lot of things. And, like, you can put a nice, like, I have, like, marble top tables, and I'll put a lamp on it, and four or five, I see how much stuff I can get on it, and he don't want it. He wants to put a lamp on it, and that's it. But if there's a spot, usually I can find something to put on it.
Have you ever designed, like, the interior of someone else's houses and stuff like that?
Did what?
Did you ever design someone's interior of their house and stuff
I've done some kitchens and some bathrooms, you know, just that kind of thing, but not really.
And so what led you to McAdoo's if you majored in interior design?
Well, I had left Ingersoll Rand, and I had a friend. She had an antique store. And so I was working there, and she was, like, gone all the time, so I pretty much ran the store. Well, then I got a chance to run a antique mall that was that used to be here in Roanoke. And I did that. Well, then the city took the building, and the people that owned it, the building, and had the antique mall, he owned McAdoo's. And so I just went from there into McAdoo's.
And so he hired you knowing that you were going to be designing and picking things out for the inside of McAdoo's?
No, not at first. Not at first.
So at first, what did you do? What was your job for McAdoo's? Just a server?
Oh, no. I've never worked in the restaurant. I went to work on the construction crew, and we were, like building booths and just that kind of stuff, doing a lot of the layouts and I would pick the fabric for the cushions, and then he just kept getting me more and more and more to do that. I just ended up doing just that.
So while designing the inside of McAdoo's, how did you get the vision to get all these crazy things and just stick them
everywhere? I have no idea.
It just, like, came to mind.
I guess it's just looking at things different than... I can kind of see ahead and look what the end result is going to be before it is there. A lot of times, I would be doing something, and he would, like, why are you doing that? And I said, it'll work out, it'll work out. And then when I finished it, he's like, wow, isn't that great?
So how long did it take you to do everything from start to finish?
What, a restaurant?
Mm-hmm.
3 or 4 months.
Not too bad.
Nah, usually it was 3 or 4 months.
And so along the way of picking things up and antiques and stuff like that for McAdoo's, did you meet anyone interesting along the way? Like, would you buy antiques and crazy things from interesting people?
I bought some the original light fixtures off the outside of Hotel Roanoke. I bought some light fixtures from out of the old the Roanoke Theater that's been closed for a long time. Meryl Streep did come in the antique shop and did a lot of shopping for her friends. It was on a Sunday, I think, and we were closed. And she called Saturday and said, could she come in? And I said, well, if it's just you. And I went down and opened the shop, and she came in, and she bought $4,000 or $5,000 worth of stuff.
Wow.
Just little knickknacks and stuff to give her friends.
Do you meet anyone else famous in that line of job?
Yeah, there was a guy, a little short actor. I can't think of his name. He was doing a movie down at Flint Mountain Lake. And I did, we loaned some stuff for the for Dirty Dancing up at Mountain Lake with Patrick Swayze. We loaned them some stuff one time. But that was about it. They're just people.
And so what made you really want to retire if you loved it so much?
I like to travel. We take a couple of cruises a year, or we'll take a trip up to Charlestown to the horse races, or we'll go out to Vegas. We do something every about 3 months, probably.
What has been your favorite vacation spot?
Oh, Lord. Belize.
What kind of stuff did you do there?
Huh?
What kind of stuff did you do there?
In Belize, you can live like a king for nothing there. I mean, absolutely. We've looked into, buying a place there. I mean, you can buy a $300,000 home, for like $40,000. And plus, you can get a maid that'll live there for like, you know, $20 a month.
Wow. So what other places?
It's just nice to relax, and I like to go out fishing, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing.
So what other destinations have you visited? What other destinations have you gone to?
Well, we've been... I haven't been to Europe, but just mainly Mexico, South America. I've been to Venezuela. Where else we've been? We've been to Biloxi. We've been to Seattle. We've been to Vancouver. We like Aruba too. Aruba's really nice.
So you mentioned before that you had gone to Vegas.
Oh yeah.
Can you tell us about that experience?
My mom and dad like to gamble, and they would go about every 4 months, 3 or 4 months. And my mom's nickname was Totsie. And I've got a caricature of her in my den, and it says Slotsy Totsy. She liked to play the $5 slot machines, and I saw her win $37,000 one time. Now, my dad, he liked to play blackjack, $100 a hand, and he would never tell you whether he won or lost. But we used to do a father-son gambling trip. We would go up to Atlantic City. And he always told me, whatever I took, he would match it and give it to me. And so we would. Most of the time I'd lose, but most of the time he'd win.
So were there any trips that you and your partner and your parents had taken?
Me and my parents used to go to Vegas, but Danny's went with me everywhere. I mean, we go.
And so how did you meet him?
One enchanted evening, across a crowded room, at the park. He said I was stalking him, and I told him, he said, now I don't know, but he said that I came up and I said, you're going home with me, and he said, no, I'm not either. He said I was drunk, and he said later, when he saw me and I wasn't, he said, well, I think I kind of like him. And he was actually renting from a good friend of mine. And I went over to this friend's. We were going, my parents had a summer home in Craig County. We were going over there, and he came out, and we talked, and I asked him if he wanted to go over there. And he said, yeah. And we were together ever since.
Wow. So after that whole thing, when you first had met, where did you guys usually go out for, like, dates and stuff like that?
Trade Winds, Park, Last Straw. Then there was another one, my friend, the one that had the house that he lived in. He owned a little gay bar on Kirk Avenue called the Night and Day for a short period of time. He was a country and western singer.
Pretty cool.
Well, he even had a Hank Williams Jr. look-alike thing, and he would do a gig in Vegas, and he had a tour bus.
And would you go out there with him?
No, I never went. And then we take off, usually, do you know the movie Sordid Lives?
I don't.
Write that down and rent it. It's one of the most funniest movies you will ever. It's called Sordid Lives. It's got like Delta Brooke in it and a Burke. And it's got a lot of famous people in it. But it's a trailer trash movie with a lot of gay people in it and people trying to quit smoking. But anyway, they do a thing on that up at Timberfell. That's the place we go up in Tennessee. It's a gay men's resort. And it's just people act out the parts in the movie. It is so funny.
So what kind of things go on at a all men's resort?
Well, it's all naked and, well, they have saunas. There's backpacking and horseback riding. People bring their pets. It's just a lot of... I've met airline pilots and doctors and lawyers from all over the country there. It's just a getaway, you know, that they can... You know, you'd think there'd be a lot of sex and, you know, because everybody's walking around naked. But it isn't. It's you meet some of the nicest people. You meet a lot of married people that have boyfriends on the side, and they'll come up from Florida and, you know, spend a week up there just to get away.
Did you go there a lot?
We used to go once a year in the summer.
So, do you feel that your essential identity is based on your sexual orientation? So do you think that you would be different if you weren't gay?
No. No. I'd probably be married and have 4 or 5 kids and probably in debt up to my butt, but that would be the only thing.
So you never wanted to adopt kids?
We thought about it, but I'm too old. I mean, you know, I'm too old to do it. If I were younger, I would definitely think about it. I would definitely think about it. But kids are for young people.
Agreed.
I got 2 dachshunds.
And so do you usually, like, take them around town and walk around and whatnot?
Nah, not really. I mean, they'll go on trips with us.
Yeah.
Well, if we drive. But, well, one of them is 3 years old, and the other one is 5 months. And one of them's a standard dachshund, and the other one's a miniature dachshund. And they're good dogs.
So those are your babies. Huh? Those are your kids.
Oh, yeah, those are our kids. And they don't want for anything.
Back to Roanoke, do you think that there were any important events that happened in Roanoke that kind of changed the stigma around the gay community here?
Except for Pride in the Park. See, I think personally Pride in the Park's gotten to be just a carnival. You know, when it first started, and I think it had a good, it had good substance about it, but I don't think now it has like the real. It's gotten so commercialized, and you know, with all the vendors, and I mean, we didn't have that then.
So when did you realize that it was changing? It was more commercialized.
When it moved from Highland Park to Elmwood Park.
And so were some of your best times?
It was a little more private then.
Right. And you obviously liked that more.
Yeah.
So what exactly goes on during that?
What, Pride in the Park?
Yes.
Oh, they have guest speakers in, and there's just a, you know, a lot of kids. I think there's a lot of gay people that have children. And, you know, they bring all the kids, there's face painting, and it's just, that's not for me.
Understandable. So, politically, what are your thoughts on how Roanoke has changed over the years? Do you think that there have been legislature passed?
I think because of the big gay population here, I don't think Republican, Democrat, or man or woman that's running for anything, I don't think they want to step on their toes. So they will be supporting them to get their vote. If somebody came out and they were really anti-gay or whatever, and they came out on a platform like that, they may as well shoot themselves. I mean, and there's a lot of officials in town that have kids and have brothers and sisters that are gay. that are very prominent people in town.
So overall, though, your experience in the Roanoke area is pretty good.
Yeah.
For being a gay man.
Yeah. And I will say the women have had it easier than men. Because, you know, it's every straight redneck dream is to, is to have sex with a lesbian and change them over. That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, they love to see two women having sex, but they wouldn't dare watch two men. You know, they just think that's the hottest thing in the world.
Why do you think that there's that stigma?
I don't know. I think the men that think that they're not challenged by a woman.
Right.
Or they would be by a man.
Well, I think that's about it. So we would just like to thank you for your time. If you have any closing remarks or anything you'd like to say?
No, not really.
Okay. Thank you, Ron.
Not that I haven't asked already. Did y'all talk to Danny Jones?
Did we talk to Danny?
Danny Jones.
Yeah, the man who referred you to us, or the man who referred.
He used to be the librarian here.
We talked to someone, I forget.
Danny Jones.
It might have been him.
I think he said he did it in the office in Roanoke College.
Yeah, I honestly think it was him.
Was that him?
I think so.
The beard.
I didn't see anyone. We talked to someone else, but I don't.
We didn't talk
via email. Yeah.
It's like I met him when I first got out of service, and we've been friends for 50 years, 40 years.
Wow, a long time. But oh yeah, you can stop it.